Welcome to Season 7, Episode 9 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we talk about electronic devices at the gaming table, and we also take a little stab at making the most of your environment in gaming. Again, welcome to Season 7, Episode 9 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this week is Tristan. Welcome back.
Hey, good to be back.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I have some, you know, it's weird, the news. News is always a weird thing. There's not as many Kickstarters, and then there are a lot of Kickstarters. It's kind of weird. I found some additional ones after I sent out the show notes.
Oh, all right. Well, hey.
You know.
Always fun.
Kind of a couple of random ones, but I thought they were cool. But cool. Why don't we just go ahead and hit the news? A couple of basic news items. Nothing, I don't know, depending on who you are, it's either exciting or not exciting. They're both WotC related. You know, not that I'm a anti-WotC, but it's like they're not really high on my radar these days as things that I really actively pursue for my personal use. Mm-hmm. You know, because as some of you may know, I've been doing a lot of Savage Worlds lately.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, someone was telling me that on Roll20, mine was one of only three Savage Worlds games that was actually accepting players.
Huh.
Yeah. So, there you go.
Well, there you go. Exactly, yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting little stat. I'm sure there are others out there, just they're not accepting players. First up, Sean K. Reynolds. The original post said, rehired by WotC, but the truth is he's actually... contract position with WotC. To help manage, I love this. I've taken a contract position to help manage lore and other content for D&D and Forgotten Realms in order to make it easier for WotC and licensors, I can't pronounce that word, people they license to make stuff.
Yeah. Huh.
I'm not actually doing game design. I'm helping sort out lore and other content. And in parentheses, that's primarily for Forgotten Realms. So they can. So WotC and licensees like video game companies have easy access to the information they need. Interesting.
Huh.
So I will link that in the show notes. I just thought that was interesting because I know it's interesting. They're just using them to organize their stuff.
Well, apparently that must be something that he was good at back in the day, because it does seem kind of weird that would just bring him back just for that, you know?
Hey, you know, money is money.
Well, true. I mean, I agree with you there.
I'm just saying, you know, we've talked about this many times, you know, any type of game design or anything in this industry does not get paid the rock star fees that people think they do.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, I'm not... you know, I'm not knocking on his end. I mean, I'm sure, you know, he can always use the money. I'm just kind of more curious as to why, you know, WotC makes the decision to bring him back, you know, just to do this as opposed to...
Well, they
know,
probably... Well, I'm thinking they probably thought that he had the greatest knowledge base on... This is going to sound weird. Basically, their product and their setting.
Well, you know, maybe that's it. I mean,
you know, working in the computer universe, that's why you hire people, you know. I mean, that's for my company. You hire someone sometimes not for any other reason or even contract them because they're the ones that know the shit that you're trying to deal with.
Yeah, so man, maybe that's just it.
And I would just suspect that he still knows. And the people that should know don't.
Well, that could be the case.
So, thought that was interesting. Other than that, the other one was the WotC survey. Do you remember when the WotC survey came out?
I do remember that, yes.
Well, the results are in, and apparently the caption for this particular piece was, WotC survey results, class is okay, Eberron needs work.
Well.
You know, and
yeah.
I guess I love this. The big ticket issues were sorcerer options, monk way of the four elements options, and more sweeping issues with Eberron stuff, including the Warforged and Artificer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, it's, you know, again, kind of interesting. You know, personally, again, I don't really play D&D, so I can't really comment to these. But I don't know. You know, it's one of those things. It goes both ways with these kind of surveys. One, it's interesting that they did that because they want customer feedback. But on the other hand, one of my biggest things is always with any game setting or whatever, as gamers, we can be whiny little bitches.
Well, we certainly can.
You know, I mean, so sometimes I'm not quite sure how to take some of these. You know, it's like, it's interesting, but it's like when you ask a whole bunch of people, usually the people that are the biggest complainers are the people that take the survey.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but on the plus side, if that's the case, then if these are the major complaints, that's not bad.
No, that's not bad at all. And then so, seeing as we haven't seen any official, you know, Eberron material, you know, from WotC for 5th edition yet, I'm glad to hear that at least, you know, we're getting some work on it, and, you know, that we'll hopefully maybe by the end of the year we'll get, you know, some of it actually out that we can, you know, start using.
Actually, Mike Merles actually says, but doesn't announce, that I expect you'll see some revisions to the Eberron's material before the end of the year.
Yeah.
That's supposedly a quote. Again, like everything else, unless it's an official print, just because he says it doesn't mean it will happen.
Right, exactly. But I would like to see Eberron come back for the new edition. I was a big fan of it when it came out for 3.5, so.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, that was it. That was pretty interesting. So, not too much news. I mean, it's hard to do news because sometimes you would get bogged down in some real product minutia.
Well, yes, indeed. The only other bit of news that I saw, I mean, and I think actually it dropped not shortly thereafter, after our last episode, was just the whole deal with Savage Worlds is actually going to be releasing a Rifts.
Oh,
book.
Yes, that's true. We actually posted that on our Facebook page and stuff. And yeah, I'm kind of dubious about that myself, but that's interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting, especially because the knock on, you know, Rifts for so many years has been that, you know, the system is so clunky, nobody can use it. And so now that it's moving to a more elegant system, you know, of Savage Worlds, I'm really curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. Unfortunately, my understanding about Kevin Sabata is he's not a nice person.
Well, I have heard that too, yeah.
You know, so. I mean, I can neither confirm nor deny that because I have no personal experience, but I've basically heard he's, yeah.
Yeah, so who knows? I mean, you know, just because it's been announced is no guarantee that we'll actually see it, but who knows?
I'm sure we'll see something. I mean, and I think, I do agree that probably for a lot of people it's going to be, oh, finally something simpler. But again, it's like it's hard. It's going to be interesting to see how certain things translate, because it's going to be a lot of work. I mean, there is a vehicle system in Savage Worlds, but is there really a mecha system for any setting so far, really? Or is it? I mean, I'm assuming it would just be considered a vehicle, but still.
Yeah, still, I'm not sure how that would work. And
I guess it's technically is a vehicle. I mean, if you use a science fiction companion for certain things, I mean, a lot of those things are kind of battlesuit vehicle kind of things. And, you know, I mean, you have the heavy weapons rule where, you know, if something is like that, then I guess, you know, they can't, you know, if it's not a heavy weapon against something that's heavily armored, then considered heavy armor, then you can't penetrate it even with normal weapons. Whereas, so, I mean, I guess that's how that's going to work.
So I guess that's, yeah.
So.
Well, like I said, it'll be interesting to see when it comes out.
Yep. No, I agree. Be very interesting. So. All right. Well, why don't we get to the other stuff? First up, I don't know if you've ever listened to... This came up, and I figured the guy that put it out, it's like he gained some traction when he initially announced it, but it does not have traction now. Every year, I think they've been... I don't know how long he's been doing it, but there is the Just In From... Gen Con podcast that just happens during, and apparently he's set up a Kickstarter to kind of fund his visit this time. He's only asking for a grand. He only has like $372. And he has 18 days to go. So if you happen to have ever listened to that podcast, and it's something that you want to, I guess, experience this year for Gen Con if you're not going, you might consider backing it. I don't think I've ever had the balls to say, hey, you know what? Why don't you pay for me to go to Gen Con? But hey, you know, I mean, if you, if this is something that you want to, you know, obviously listen to, a lot of it really boils down to if you happen to be, I mean, a couple of things are like, if you're actually going, like you can actually sit in on some of his interviews and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of interesting again. So I'm going to, I put that out there for those that, want to support that. I mean, he does have t-shirts that he'll give you.
That he does.
So I thought that was kind of fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of other people that we know is, you know, Cobalt Press has another Kickstarter out there. And it's been, it actually was out there a while. I missed it when I looked for it. That mm-hmm. happens sometimes. I don't know if you've noticed that. It's like when you look
Well, you know, every once in a while, things do go under the radar.
You know, I just happened to catch it from some other post, but they have the Advanced Races Compendium for Pathfinder coming out, which include the races that they currently have is 15. I can't pronounce half of them, but I guess a few of the highlights are the Centaur, the Dragonkin, the Gnoll, the Gearforged, the Lizardfolk, Kobold, Ravenfolk, Shadowfey, Tiefling, some sort of weird, it says Waspfolk in parentheses, and a Werelion.
Huh.
And there's a couple in there that I could not even begin to pronounce, so I'm not going to butcher it for people. And I guess if they reach their... It did fund it. Let me see. Yes, it's actually been funded, so there's 12 days to go, so if you want it, you can go get it. And if they actually reach 27,000, they're going to have the Minotaur chapter added, which is cool. I'd always, you know, I like Minotaurs.
Yep.
But I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, I guess you can have, for some people, you can never have too many races.
Well, that's true. Some people you can't. I don't know. There's a, you know, a good list of races here. Personally, as somebody who is a big fan of Eberron, as I mentioned before, the Gearforged looks like something that might be right up my alley, but...
Yeah, well, you know, I look at it this way. I've always liked... I remember when... I still call them Lizardmen, even though everyone... You know, I've always kind of liked the Lizardmen as a concept. The Kobolds, sure, that's cool.
Yep.
Centaur, sure, why not? That can be kind of cool. I've never really... had much use for the Tiefling, but I know people that swear by that. That's their race. It's like, okay, you know, whatever. I mean, so there's a good, there's probably, for any person that actually plays Pathfinder, there's probably one or two races in here that they would consider creating characters for.
So, oh, absolutely.
So yeah. I would think, you know, for, you know, $25 for the PDF, yeah, it might be worth it.
Yeah, no, it might be worth it to give yourself a few additional options here and there.
Yeah, it never hurts. So, you know, I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, no, I may have to look into that one myself here.
So no, we also have some other ones. We have another Osric, are actually basically some sort of any of the clones. There is a another module, Maximum Mayhem Dungeons Number 3, Villains of the Undercity. Pretty modest goal. Only was asking $500. Has already reached three times that. Still has 26 days to go.
Wow.
So, and it's not, it's like $8 for the PDF.
Ah, wow.
You know, and I mean, so my viewpoint is if that's your thing, I say go for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, I guess I'm a firm believer in you never, especially when you play D&D or any of those, you can never have too many adventure/dungeons.
It's true enough.
If for no other reason than sometimes just the maps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a big fan of, you may not use the adventure as written, but you may use parts of the adventure. You may just use the maps of the adventure. You know, that's the beauty of gaming in general. You can pick and choose pieces. It's like, you don't have to use everything as written. Even though sometimes I... typically do, because it's just easier on my mental state.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, but yeah, for $8, that's not a bad price for just the PDF.
No, not a bad price at all.
And it's like $15 if you want the print and the PDF.
Once again, not bad at all.
No. All right. So now we have come up to what some of my favorite pieces, which are miniatures.
Hmm.
You know. So this particular Kickstarter is Fantasy Resin Custom Miniature Collection. And they're asking for $7,500. They're almost there. They still got 22 days. And they have some interesting characters. They have like a witch hunter, an archaeologist, which is funny because really archaeology didn't exist, and I won't get into that.
No. Best not to.
You know, but I mean, they have some pretty interesting looking pieces, I think. I mean, they have, mm-hmm. I like the, they say big bad wolf, so I mean, that's obviously some sort of werewolf, but it's a freaking, it's 40 millimeter base. So.
Yeah.
Still, looks pretty cool. And I guess mm-hmm. they have some customizations that you can do, like a mutant pack customization.
Mm-hmm.
So they have some options, which are, you know, those are the heights that you get with each miniature. You get one torso, one set of arms and head, and a second set of arms and head, and a base. So basically, which is kind of cool. So you can kind of, you get like these pieces that you can kind of customize or assemble to a certain degree, which I think mm-hmm. is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I could see.
That is kind of neat.
I mean, I like that idea. And I, to be honest with you, I mean, these are resin again, which nothing wrong with that. I think a lot of, I mean, let's face it. I went to the game store the other day and it's like Reaper miniatures. They don't even carry any of the metals. I don't even know. Does Reaper even make metals anymore?
Or
have they gone straight to plastic? Because the plastics are a hell of a lot cheaper. And I'm sure that's why people are buying them. So, mm-hmm. you know, no problem. And, it is a little expensive. It's $15 for a single miniature.
Mm-hmm.
And then $40 for three. You know, again, these are kind of customized pieces, but they, at least the photos that they show look, I think they look pretty damn good, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I completely agree. Know, they look good.
I think what it is, I'm amazed more and more how well the resins look. Because I still remember the early D&D minis. Now those were mass produced, and it was the D&D miniature game was its own thing. But I knew a lot of people that picked those up because it's like, where else am I going to get beholders really cheap? Where else am I going to get, you know, this creature or that creature for really cheap? Mm-hmm. You know, you could feel, you could feel the dragon. You know, so I get it. You know, but it's like you compare these to some of those, and it's like it's. I mean, even on painted, I mean,
it's night and day.
Yeah, so I am impressed. I won't be buying any because I don't do very much online. So
yeah, no, it's kind of hard to justify buying miniatures when most of your tabletops are virtual.
And hey, guess who we got on the line?
Oh,
we got our buddy Ben. He was we didn't quite think he was going to make it, so we finally, we kind of started without him, as we like to call it. So why don't we take a second and add him in? Well, welcome, Ben. Welcome to the show. Glad you could finally make it. You've been skipping out on us.
I know. It's been a very busy year, unfortunately.
Well, isn't that everybody? It's always busy.
Mm.
So, well, we're going to go ahead and do the last three Kickstarters I have, and then we'll hit the topics hard and heavy. How's that sound?
Perfect. Thank
okay.
you.
So next up in the list is these Terralith Organic Metal RPG Gaming Dice. It's obviously in England because the price is in pounds. They're very unique, to say the least, looking. Right? Either one of you actually look at those?
Yeah, no, I'm looking at them right now. They are very unique.
So he's asking full set of seven dice, 27 pounds.
It's like $50.
Yeah, well, they are metal. So, pretty, I mean, granted, pretty interesting. I don't know if I would ever buy them, but I have to give them props for the design. They look very interesting and
original.
Original. Yeah, that's a good word. Mm-hmm. Again, looking at them, I don't know how easy they would be to read.
Yeah, that would be my kind of issue with them too. I'm like, wow, these are really unique looking dice.
Interestingly enough, he met his goal for his minimum order. So, you know, if these are your thing, you know, or you really want, if you see these and you like these really strange organic, I don't even know how to describe them. You know, words do not describe these dice, how they look. So I would say go to the
kitchen. No, you definitely need to go take a look at them and see for yourself.
You know, it reminds me of something from some science fiction movie, like some sort of alien race would have devices that look like this or something, you know?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
You know, that's the way, that's what these look like. You know, these look like some sort of alien device dice. So... But kind of cool. Again, you know, I'm not going to do it. He says, truly unique and most affordable set of metal dice. I don't know. Well, I guess it depends on your definition of affordable.
True enough.
So.
Do you suppose they roll randomly?
He apparently claims they do. He's like, he says that they're centrifugal force cast with the metal to prevent air pockets, because the air pockets would obviously throw off the...
Sure, right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Again, you know, even a metal in a cast, I mean, I just can't imagine, you know, this. It'll be very interesting, because it's like, there's still going to be weird imperfections in any type of dice like this.
Sure.
So, again, I couldn't imagine, it's probably better that they're made out of metal than plastic, because I don't know. But, yeah, just any metal dice. Have you ever rolled metal dice?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't have much action.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
So... Next up, we have a Kickstarter. I don't even know why this is on here, but this is interesting. He was only asking $22, and I just thought that was funny enough that I had to add it. The Dream of Ruins, an old-school revival source book. He's actually reached $972, so... And he would... Because I guess it's for... it's kind of... What's weird, it's going to be free at some point? I don't get. I like I said, I didn't quite read the entire thing because it was just. I thought that was just too funny. Is the Dreams of Ruin is an event book compatible with Labyrinth Lords and Mutant Future and almost any old school RPGs. It details a threat, multiple worlds in scope that can easily destroy nations, destroy even the most powerful party of adventurers. I love this. Dream of Ruins is the result of mixing this guy Jeffries. That's the author's. Interest in gardening, accounting, and his love of Moldova's version of the rules for classic fantasy gaming.
Well, he is in Pittsburgh, and that is the land of three rivers, right?
Mm.
So why not three different professions trending into one source book?
Yeah, I guess.
I guess for $22. Yeah, $22. You love Dreams of Ruin and want to back it at the retail price. That's just weird. The book will be released for free, as in beer, May 15th. Any new material will be released before October. See, I don't. Like I said, I don't get what he's doing. But I just brought it up because I just thought that was pretty interesting. That was pretty cocky. That he was only looking for basically. So basically, he was looking for one backer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Just thought that was fascinating.
So wait, is it its own? I guess I don't know what Dreams of Ruin is.
That's the name of his book, and he claims it's an event book compatible with Labyrinth Lore. So, Mutant Future.
Yeah,
which is based off Labyrinth Lore, I believe. So, kind of interesting. Like I said.
Well, it's no Moonbase Alpha.
Yep.
No.
The Moonbase Alpha, yeah, the next one up. Again, this was a weird one. Only 60-pound goal. He has 21 pounds. Has 21 days to go. And 1-inch floor plans, PDF.
Hmm. I like those, though.
Yeah. They're kind of kooky. You know, he's only asking 3 pounds for the PDF, and so he's only doing a PDF only, no other things, which is kind of cool. So he only needs like 20 backers, really, to produce it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing, you know, risks and challenges. Unless the ability to send an email comes to an end, there is no risk to the project. The PDF is complete. All I need at the end of the project are backers' email details. I don't even know.
So he's just trying to make some scratch because he spent some time making
yeah
these PDFs. Yeah.
Still, still, you know, okay, they're still kind of cool.
I like his wall panels, actually, the little fold-out ones.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yep.
Those are, I have to admit, those are kind of cool. See, something like that, it's like, I swear, I don't know where I've seen them, but there's like, I've seen clear plastic stands that are kind of like that.
Yeah, me too.
That'd be great to have that in like a clear plastic stand or something.
Yep. You know, oddly enough, I recall, and I think I still have it somewhere, that back in the day, TSR's Marvel game had a set that was for like a Hydra base or something, and I swear to you, it had doors that looked just like that.
Oh, wouldn't surprise me. Would not surprise me one bit.
I doubt every aspect is an original creation. I'm sure the art is original, but you know, it's no doubt inspired by.
Yeah.
But I like how he the way he's got them set up, so he's laying them, superimposing them on top of each other. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Well, that's one way to do it.
I saw a I guess it's off topic, but I saw it was on clear plastic stock, but it was the different array patterns for spell casting.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you know, that was pretty cool to drop down, but they were huge. like had to roll them out.
So, all right, well, why don't we go ahead and get into the topics? And the first one up is the one that you suggested, Ben, so I'm glad you actually made it.
Yes.
Which was electronic devices at the gaming table, which is always, you know, it's a modern problem, as we like to call it.
Yeah, so it's a pet peeve for me. When I'm the GM, it really irritates me when people, you know, have their nose in their phone or their PDA or laptop or tablet or what have you.
How very 80s/90s of you to say PDA.
Yeah, all right. Do you remember the Newton? No one else does.
Yes.
So there's that. But then when I'm a player, I actually really like to have it because of A, reference material, and B, you know, I'm not always involved in the action. If something is going on between the GM, maybe I just play with bad GMs. But if something's going on between the GM and part of the party, you know, you're kind of in limbo, and it's nice to have an asset like that to turn to entertain yourself. I think they're bad.
Well, you know, it's tough because again, I'm kind of with you on the one hand. On the other hand, you know, I'm not, because there is pros. You know, there are pros and cons. You know, I've seen a lot. I mean, I know guys that they don't have a printed character sheet, period. They just don't do it anymore. Everything that they do is, you know, on their laptop. And in one case, that's the guy that I remember. It's like everything was on his laptop. You know, he would do, you know, his character sheet was there, all his notes for all his spells, everything was there. He didn't have a character sheet at all. So heaven help him if his laptop died.
Exactly.
You know, but then again, you know, again, you talked about reference material. That's a big one because it's like, I know a lot of people don't carry all their books anymore or even have books. You know, they have the PDF. Mm. You know, I kind of still fall in the category of it's like still live to have the main rule book in hardcover. But a lot of the supplements, PDF for me. It's just much easier to do the PDFs for a lot of the supplements. And I usually have the main rule book in PDF form as well. Mm-hmm. You know, because let's face it, with a modern tablet today, you know, you can put all those PDFs on one tablet and it's like, well, you know, that's light as pretty much that's light as a feather compared to what I would have to carry in a backpack.
Oh, yeah.
And don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not opposed to, you know, it's not like I'm a wimp. I'll carry 80 pounds of gear on me. I don't care.
Oh, yeah. No.
You know, but if I don't have to.
Well, yeah. No, absolutely.
Well, plus in the when they're digital, you can bookmark them, search them, even mark them up, you know, with notes. And
Also, you know, it's like, and then you look at Roll20, and one of the things, you know, in many ways that Roll20 is starting to go towards is not necessarily just playing the game virtually online with never seeing anybody, is to use it as, say, like, they just recently got some better tablet support, basically using it as aid while you're playing a game that you may be right there for. You know, right. So you're using the tablets for certain things, including your character sheet and some other, maybe even just the die rolls. And, you know, you may be still using the map, or heck, you know, let's face it, I could hook my computer up to my large screen TV and all of a sudden, hey, there's the map, and it's only could move around their characters.
Yeah, so, true enough.
And I mean, people do that. So it's kind of weird where we've reached a point in the technology where we're doing both. We're doing, you know, we have a lot of augmented table gaming. And we have a lot of, you know, traditional pencil and paper gaming.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's, you're substituting paper for, you know, for an electronic device. I mean, we've almost reached the Star Trek. You know, here's your pad. Okay.
Yeah,
here's your pad with your character sheet. You know, that kind of thing. Although their pads were more disposable. It's like, you know, just throw them around. I have 20 pads. Why do I have 20 pads? Which I never could figure out. It's like, why do you have all these damn pads? You know, we have the technology to put them all on.
Yeah, I guess they had one document on one and a spreadsheet on the other.
Yeah, maybe.
It was a lot
of imagination for why they had so many pads.
I think so. You know, some sort of weird organizational. It's like, you know, why the hell isn't there? Why doesn't this pad have wireless capability? I don't get it.
Right. I mean, after all, you can just touch your chest and talk to Starfleet Command a billion miles away, but, you know, Wi-Fi on the starship.
no Wi-Fi at all. And you know, our pads only have memory for, you know, one file. That's it.
Right.
Well, you know, in the original Star Trek, it was even worse. They just had those little plastic squares. It's like, here. You know, it wasn't a pad. It was just like, here. It's like, I still remember the one where, you know, McCoy gave it to Spock, and he was like, here's my instructions. There's only one word on it. Eat.
It seems like a bit of a waste.
Exactly. You know,
I guess when you have replicators, you know, anything's possible. But
Well, you know, technically in the original series, those weren't replicators.
No, they weren't. But
right, they were some sort of mechanized prep device.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, it's sad that I know that shit. And I'm sure there's some real Star Trek geeks out there who are like, he's gotten it wrong.
Right.
Probably.
You know, I can't help that. But no, I mean, we really kind of run the full gambit where we're now, you know, like I said, I don't even meet in person anymore because I'm doing Roll20 virtually because it's easier for me. But even in person, you know, even if they don't use the devices at the table, we're using them to do our character generation, or to, you know, have a PDF that we fill in the attributes and print it out, or, you know, have a character electronic character sheet that we save so we can reprint it. I mean, you know how many characters I could have lost that I've lost over the years just because, well, I don't have copies. And other than that, I'm a big fan. I'm not like, I don't know, I'm not one of those people that are like, oh, I have to save every single character that I've ever made. I know people that are like that. I was like, dude.
I know people that save every iteration of each character.
And I just don't have time for that. I'm like, you know, I meet a lot of people that have this feeling in the universe that every character I create actually is in existence somewhere, and if I throw it away, it disappears.
Wow.
Yes, I have met people like that. And I'm like, dude, pass me the dope you're smoking.
That's a single play event.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it is fascinating though that people do that. You know, it's just like I can't keep up. I mean, I'm not despairing against those people that do that. I'm just saying it's like that's just I can't do that. But that said, obviously being able to store all that stuff in electronic format makes something like that easier.
Right.
So, and which is why I see again why, you know, they're using it at the table because they're making their notes and on their sheets, you know, because they don't want to, it's easier to update. And, you know, I foresee, you know, that, you know, like I said, we'll use tablets a lot more than we do now.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
same line. I guess this is slightly off topic, but why not? How do you feel about the character sheet tools that like manage the character sheet for you? Like, didn't D&D 5 have that?
I don't know if D&D 5 had that. I know D&D 4 had that. There was something where you could like subscribe to WotC's site and basically it would like, you know, keep track of your character sheets and, you know, would give you you know, basically it was like a character generator that could, you could look, you know, save your sheets on and stuff like that. It was kind of like that other program that came out that for Pathfinder, Hero Lab.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Hero Lab does other things besides Pathfinder, I believe, as well, don't they?
Hero Lab does a lot of stuff. Yeah. Pathfinder was kind of like the big first one for it, but then I think you can do Mutants and Master War Minds and Savage Worlds. And
well, it's just like the Hero system has Hero Designer.
Yeah, exactly.
So if your rule system is so complicated that you need a computer to calculate your sheet, then fail. For me.
Well, you know, and
that is the depth of complexity I just don't want to experience.
You know, I have mixed feelings on this one as well, because it's like, on the one hand, I get it, you know, because sometimes it's nice because it's like you don't need to remember every esoteric rule. On the other hand, if you're doing any homebrew or any slight customizations, usually that system doesn't handle those very well.
Right.
True.
And I mean, or if you're the game master and you want to do those customizations, you have to make those customizations and have your players have that customization file for their use. And that's not to say that they can't do that, but then that just adds a more whole level of complexity to yourself. I mean, I experienced this even with Roll 20, because think about it. They have character sheets in Roll 20.
Right.
And, you know, you can use if you're not the mentor level, you have to just use the sheets provided. Or you can go in there and just use no sheet and just have stuff on a, have the characters have attributes that they have to manually add one at a time, which is kind of a pain in the ass, which is why the character sheets are nice. You know, as a mentor, you can actually download the sheets and make modifications to them and just use your own custom sheets, which is cool, which is what I do.
Yeah.
You know, but even still, it's like you look at some of the sheets that some of these guys have made, and I mean, we're talking like for D&D, especially D&D, Pathfinder, even there's two different Savage World sheets, and one of them is this really complex tab, you know, sheet, and it's just like, dude, my mind explodes looking at that.
Right.
Because it's like, Savage Worlds, really? It's a simple system. I don't need a sheet that's so complicated that, you know, it could, track nuclear submarines.
Well, maybe you do. I mean, especially if you're going to play that new, Rifts expansion when that comes out.
Hey, you never know. You could be right. But I'm just saying, you know, even in Roll 20, especially when you're a mentor, it's like you reach that point where it's like, how much customization should I be doing versus, you know, it's like, oh, you know, like a lot of people who are mentor might have mentor levels and like have to use API scripts to do additional functionality. And it's like either you have to write that or borrow that. And so there's a level of complexity. There's a level of buy-in that you have to do to use that kind of electronic media.
Right.
You know, like, for example, like when I do my maps, I have to, you know, if I don't have, you know, I may have to draw the map or I have to maybe use elements of the map. There's a lot of, there is prep time that goes far and above. Like if I hand drew the map and I like, or I have an adventure that I already know about and I want to use that, I have to do some additional steps to get that ready so that my players can use it.
Right. So, yeah.
So, I mean, there's that interesting aspect to the electronic device is that, you know, as we use electronic devices more, somebody gets the grunt work that either you're trying to avoid, that everyone else avoids. Somebody still has to pay for that.
Right.
Well, yeah, true.
So, do I see, you know, again, phones? See, that's the thing. It's like, you know, and that's the other thing at a gaming table. It's like, I understand tablets. Phones, not so much, but, you know, they can be used. I don't know. I think it's just a matter of consistency, policy, and, you know,
courtesy,
and make sure the game master is involving everybody.
Yeah, well, so like I say, I may have bad game masters from the player perspective.
Well, I don't think it's just necessarily just even bad game masters. It's just sometimes things bog down. I mean, sometimes it's not the game master's fault. Sometimes you just have bad players that you're playing with or somebody that eats up a lot of time. I've had that happen. Where you're just
that's
like,
fair.
It's just no, like, it's just like, you know what? Tell you what, I'm going to go out. I'm going to go to the restaurant. And when you're done, call me. I'll be back.
Yeah.
I won't come back, but call me.
But call me anyway. Yeah.
So that kind of thing. So, I mean, do I necessarily see them as an evil? I think, again, it's just a matter of courtesy. So.
Well, I think it is a matter of courtesy, but it also kind of depends on, you know, whether you're going to integrate the phones into a game or not. I mean, I'm sure, you know, some enterprising GMs actually, you know, have stopped passing notes around the table and instead are just texting back and forth with people if they need to do personal things like that as well. So,
yeah, that's true. I've seen that.
Oh, yeah. No, I guess
that's better than the table with all of the portals that you can push things through to the players from the, you know.
Oh, trust me. I once thought about designing a whole electronic table, but it was like it would be too expensive, too big, and at the end of the day, it's like, fuck, at that point, why not just have everyone use tablets?
True enough.
But yeah, I mean, great. I mean, that's it. It's like, I think that's the other thing, like Roll20's expecting is that, you know, you'll be able to do, you know, instant messaging, you know, at the table. And at a certain level, it's like, you know, it's easier to scratch a note and throw it at the GM still, if you're in person.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with that fact. I'm just saying, you know, if you're playing a sort of a more modern theme game and you want to keep, you know, in that modern theme, sometimes it's easier just to text, you know, somebody at the table with a, hey, you know, where are you at, or, you know, something like that to, you know, kind of help get yourself back in the game and also, you know, keep with that, you know, kind of more modern feel of the game that you may happen to be playing. I know when we were doing a modern themed, like, kind of horror game, that was something that, you know, kept coming up, you know, people trying to text one another by throwing notes back and forth. I'm like, you have phones, you can just use them, guys, really, I don't mind.
Yeah. No, I get it. So, I guess the net results are... I'm mixed on it, and I think it depends. Tristan, what's your verdict? Yay or nay?
I'm definitely mixed about it because while I have seen, you know, some creative and good uses for them, and certainly, you know, a lot of players, you know, do the, you know, I've got my character sheet here on my phone or, you know, on my tablet or whatever. I've also had, you know, players just kind of, you know, blankly staring into their phone playing Candy Crush while, you know, I'm off, you know, working with, you know, other players on something else. So, right. You know, 501, you know, you mean, well, not 501, 601, half dozen, the other, you know, so.
You can say it any way you want.
Well, yeah, true. Potato, potato, I would call the whole thing off. Anyway.
I say make it vodka, either way. No. All right, Ben, your verdict.
Banned.
Band, okay. We have two mixed in a band. There you go, folks. Right from the horse's mouth. Actually, wait a minute. I'm the horse's aunt. No, I'm kidding. All right. So next up is a little bit of a side topic. I just wanted to touch base because it's like it comes up. I swear I've talked about this before, and I'm sure I have. But every time I game, I always think about it. You know, it's like Roll20. I think about it. You know, I think about it anytime I game where the environment, when I say gaming environment, I'm talking about the environment that the players, characters are in. And I don't know how many times it's like you look at, and I think that's what happens even without miniatures sometimes and like actual real terrain for the miniatures. It's like you're looking, you know, you have that top down view and I don't care what's on the board. It's like it's two dimensional. You lack depth. You lack the fact that, or you even lack things like, oh my God, there was a chair there. I could have used the chair to hit the guy. Why didn't I have that? You know, so that's what I mean. It's like, how do we, you know, because I remember Aaron Alston, one of the books that he wrote for Hero System was Ninja Hero. And in there, you know, his whole thing was, he says, you got to make, adventures exciting. Why have a combat on a street when you can have it on, you know, top of a moving train. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, so, you know, make, you know, because, you know, and granted, you know, okay, so you're fighting on top of a train. There's certain environmental variables that go into play there. That's why I use that as an example. You know, it's like, well, you know, does everyone have to make agility rolls everyone, or are they slip and fall? And how does that affect certain other aspects of combat? I think a lot of times we don't use it just because we don't like to think about that shit because it just makes things really complex in our head.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because I'll take Savage Worlds for a classic example. Sometimes I forget about the whole freaking darkness penalty. It's, oh, it's dim light. Everyone's at -1. Well, Jesus Christ, combat will take forever. But it's funny because
true. It's true.
But on the other hand, I still remember, I forget, was it the original? It was one of the Three Musketeers with Michael York. But it was either the Three Musketeers or the Four Musketeers. I forget which one it was. Uh-huh. Where there was that scene where he was fighting the one count with the patch over the eye. And like they had these little lamps that they were open. You know, granted, because it's the movie, you actually can see both of them. It's not total darkness, but they're pretending it's total darkness. It's, you know, it's dim, and they're opening up these hooded lanterns, shining at the other guy, and then like shutting and try to take a stab at him with the sword.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, classic scene, and you're like, how come I've never done that in, you know, gaming? Because it would take too long. But it's right. Like, you know, but that made that scene interesting.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
I've got a great example for you.
Oh, shoot. I'd love a great example.
I remember, I think it was Pathfinder. I don't remember what the system was. It was probably Pathfinder or AD&D 3.5. I'm not sure how long ago this actually happened. So one of those two systems. And we had a character who was very bold and very aggressive, and I don't remember what race or mixed race he was, but he had some level of night vision, and he could see more than the humans in the party. And he always had this habit of charging in and leaving the party behind and then getting flanked. And we were in a situation, and we were playing on we had always played on a tabletop and just drawn it, you know, on a dry erase board. Okay. As we went. But we played one time, the GM had spent a lot of time using, I don't even remember which of the online systems it was, preparing the map, and they had this fog of war.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Capability, yep. Which basically keeps everything dark except what you can see, and then each icon had its own vision range or whatever. And
right.
So that character, that player, hit the wall of darkness and stopped. Something he had never done before. And it was because his own persona kind of kicked in. Like, I don't know what's there. There's no way in hell I would run at double speed into blackness, right? And so I think it is very important. And you're right. It is difficult to convey that because they'll power game it. And they will, you know... so after that happened, we kind of had kind of a house rule that you had to do some sort of willpower or similar type check to do things like run double speed when you really can't see, you know.
Well, I mean, again, I guess that, right. I mean, but I'm wondering, is some of it because either, the one thing I like about Savage Worlds is the modifiers are pretty easy, you know,
yeah.
For that stuff. So I think it's easier to try to incorporate environmental factors because a lot of that's already baked into the rules. Like, oh, you're shooting from a helicopter. Well, that's an unsteady platform. You get -2 to your attacks at shooting.
Okay.
You know,
uh-huh.
Okay, great. That's
yeah.
Great. Unless you happen to have one of those edges that actually, you know, you can shoot from an unsteady platform with no problem. You know,
right.
So, okay, so you can do that. So it's like, you know, it's like, oh, hey, you're both people are on a mountain that's, yeah, I don't know, volcano or some sort of earthquake shaking the mountain. Okay, I can count that as equivalent to an unsteady platform. Okay, but you guys are still fighting it out. Great, go. You know,
it's right.
Like, mm-hmm. You know, I guess that's what it is. I sometimes think that some of the rule game systems, they have rules for environments, but they're convoluted, and it's like I just don't want them to screw with that.
Sure.
I mean, does that sound about right?
Yeah.
No, it does. It definitely sounds about right. I think what, another thing that kind of comes up and why some of the stuff, it doesn't play into a, you know, factor so many times is a lot of times, you know, players are sort of looking for, you know, a way to kind of abuse the system.
No.
Absolutely. By, you know, trying to find some environmental thing.
He's never done anything illegal or immoral. No.
I like some systems, you know, kind of like your Fate or I think the Margaret Weiss systems, yeah, Cortex Plus, where things like that, you know, if you want those things to be there, okay, they can be there. You've got to, you know, spend the points or, you know, spend the expendable resource for it to be there, though.
I see.
Oh, interesting.
you know, and then it creates an advantage, and you use that advantage, but, you know, maybe at the same time, you know, the enemies can use the same advantage against you as well, so.
That's always the problem, you give the GM ideas too.
Well, yeah, that's just it, you know.
Yeah, they did that one version of Marvel, right?
Yes, they okay. did do the Marvel game.
Yeah, I could not remember, because I remember someone describing the, you know, that system to me, and it's like, it was kind of fascinating, because so it kind of goes with what you were saying. That's why I was trying to remember if, like, they did that, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they did that one, and Leverage and a couple others.
Yeah, I was trying to remember myself, what else did they do?
Yeah.
So.
Many, many things.
Yeah. No, I like I said, I just bring it up because it's like I kind of would like the listeners to call in or write in, and you know, because I kind of want to know. It's like, have they actually had this crop up a lot in games? Is it kind of a forgotten thing? Because I think a lot of times we just I know for a lot of my games, I tend to think that it's going to be a lot of we kind of just screw it. Everyone's at the same disadvantage, so basically nullifies everything.
Yeah, but, like I said, it was raining.
Right. But on the other hand, I think that you lose something with that because everyone should be at a penalty. So, yeah, the fight should take longer, and some people are just going to get frustrated and say, screw this, I'm going to run. I don't care. Or, you know, yeah. let's take, you know, I'm running Solomon Kane. It's raining. Okay, guess what? Nobody's freaking matchlock works. The powder's all wet. Good luck. Go. You know, I mean, even those are type of environmental factors, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, what is, you know, and I don't, you know what? I don't even know. I mean, does D&D or I don't even know if Pathfinder has something like that. If it's like, if you wanted to say it was Gale Force Winds, what effect does that have on archery?
I don't think it has those
rules. Yeah, you know, it's kind
well,
of.
Well, I mean, I don't think it has them in the base rules, but I'm sure if you went through some of the splat books, one of them is going to have that somewhere.
But you see what I'm saying? It's like you almost want to think, right. Like, wouldn't there be just like, even just like a guess, it's like, well, environment, you know, like even a small section on environmental factors like that, and you're just like, well, you know, you can do these things.
Yeah. Yeah. So in Pathfinder's case, I'd probably look for a spell like Wall or something, and see what those effects are, and mm-hmm. adapt that rather than try and come up with something
on your own. Spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that would make sense.
All right. Well, so that's what I'd like to hear from the listeners, whether or not they've ever used them, or you know, what do they do in those cases where obviously, like, as you mentioned, you would look for like, oh, well, I want to do, there's like this effect and I'm going to look for a spell that does something similar and kind of base it off that rather than, you know, just pull it out of my ass.
Well, yeah. And the reason I say that is because if I pull it out of my rear and it doesn't go well for the party, then I've been unfair.
Well, yeah.
You know, sometimes I get news for people. Sometimes, as a game master, you are unfair. Get over it.
Sometimes the bear gets you.
Exactly.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, like I said, you know, send us those comments. I'm going to go ahead and tell you that you can send us any comment you want. I don't care. And there's a couple ways to do that. You can send it to me at info@rpgcircus.com. Send me an email. You can attach, you know, an audio file to that if you want to record something yourself and send it to me. Or you can go to our Facebook page or our homepage, and there's the link to the SpeakPipe application, which will go ahead and record. And that will, once you're done and you hit the little button to send, it will actually send me an email notification with a link so I can actually listen to it, and which is pretty cool. You can go to our Facebook page or our Google Plus page and actually obviously make comments there. You can go to our page itself. There's a comment section on our, when we post them on our website. So, and I'd love to listen to you guys. I really appreciate the last couple of listeners that actually sent us an email and an audio comment last episode. I really appreciate that, guys. Thanks. So, I appreciate
just
that.
As a parallel.
What was that?
Just as a parallel, the number of comments you get are directly proportional to my absence.
Weird that.
Also, hey, I just still do have some stickers. I actually sent some out recently that took me a couple of weeks because I've just been super busy in my personal life. But I still have some stickers, so if you want some, shoot me an email at info@rpgcircus.com, and I will be more than happy to send those out to you. And yes, I do send them anywhere in the world. It cost me like a buck and a quarter or something, I think, like that for the general world postage. Just make sure that you send it to send whatever address you send me actually will be legal for me to send it to.
Right.
So, you know, because I don't know what, you know, like, I don't, you know, like, I, for example, I'm like, unfortunately, we're American. So if I gave you an address, I'm sure there's an actual acceptable international U.S. address system, you know, that we do. That probably puts the United States somewhere on the address. We don't normally use that normally, but I think other countries do, like in Europe. We're pretty weird, I know. Or stuck up, or I don't know what. How do you?
It's
put
right after the zip code.
It's right after the zip code. There you go. So go ahead and do that. And hey, you know what? I even dare say that if you ever wanted to come on and just be a guest host, shoot me an email, and I'll see what I can do sometime about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's all I got on.
There you go, folks. Right from the horse's patootie. All right, I beat that dead horse, I think.
I think so.
I'm going to get comments like, you weren't funny. Yeah, I know I am. And I will accept those. And I will, if you send me that in audio form, I will play those. I have no shame.
Perfect.
So I think that's it. Any closing comments from either one of you guys?
No, sir.
Nope.
Well, Ben, thanks for actually finally making it. It's been a while. And it's
I
been
think it's only my second appearance in 2015.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the year's still early. So hopefully we'll see you at more episodes. And everyone else, we'll see you in about 2 weeks.
Hoorah.
RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.